With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Views on View. I'm your host, Lindsay Bordell. With me today is Steve Edwards.
Hello from a very hot Portland.
Solomon Esseme.
It's so good to be here.
And special guest today is Stefan. Welcome, Stefan.
Hi there.
Stefan, would you mind introducing yourself for our audience?
Sure. So, well, I'm a freelance software developer based in Berlin, Germany. And I guess I got picked for this podcast because I built something cool with Vue.js, which is incidentally also the language I use when I work on projects. So, yeah, that's me.
Very nice. How did you get into programming?
Actually, I wanted to study communication design, I think it would be translated. But to get into the university, you had to like do a really hard test and do some homework and then compete with like 100 other student applicants. And so I didn't do that. And then I picked the next best thing that I liked doing, and that was IT or computer science. And After finishing my studies, well, I stayed there and started working as a software developer. So kind of came naturally, I guess, what with the internet and like the rise in personal computers, stuff like that. And I like building things, and doing so on the computer is kind of easy. So that's what I do when I work for money and also in my spare time.
Very nice.
Did you work your tail off to get that senior developer gig just to realize that senior dev doesn't actually mean dream job? I've been there too. My first senior developer job was at a place where all of our triumphs were the bosses and all the failures were ours. The second one was a great place to continue to learn and grow, only for it to go under due to poor management. And now I get job offers from great places to work all the time. Not only that, but the last job interview I actually sat in was a discussion about how much my podcast had helped the people interviewing me. If you're looking for a way to get into your dream job, then join our Dev Heroes Accelerator. Not only will we help you get the kind of exposure that makes you attractive to your dream employer, but you'll be able to ask them for top dollar as well. Check it out at devheroesaccelerator.com.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, that it's something that comes naturally if you're wanting to be a creator. It gives you that flexibility to build whatever you want. And by using a computer and being able to build for the web, you're able to deploy it to a whole bunch of people too.
Yeah, exactly. So especially with the rise of the internet. So like back when I was 12, it just like the internet just like grew and basically was made public and was accessible and affordable. And well, back then there weren't many sites around. So what did you do then if you were interested in computer science? You tried building your own site. And it grew from there, kind of.
Yeah, nice. How did you get involved with using Vue.js?
That's actually quite recent interest of mine, because originally I was like, I guess you could call it a web developer, but that's kind of like broad and not really accurate, but coming from like web development background with JavaScript, I started with jQuery like many years back, and then once this became quite sophisticated, and then there were the first single page application frameworks, and I learned AngularJS, also did some professional projects with Angular, and then Google kind of decided that Angular had to have a new major release that basically made everything you built so far pretty useless. So you had to start from scratch. And then I decided I don't want to have anything to do with Angular anymore. And I, yeah, then I looked around what alternatives are there. And then I found Vue as like the new modern Angular that doesn't have this whole bloat that came with Angular 2. And I looked into it a bit and then decided my next spare time project should be based on Vue because it looked pretty cool. And it also was easy to learn and also quite similar to what Angular did back then when it was version 1x.
That's funny to listen to your history because it pretty much mirrors mine.
Yeah.
From the beginning. I mean, I started out in PHP world, but in terms of starting with AngularJS and building, and then it converts to 2 and you're like, I don't think so. And then going into Vue.
Yeah, actually PHP is also my very first language that I used on the web, but it's like backend. So I had to pick up something front end too, and that was JS. So yeah. I'm also with the PHP background there.
Yeah, I can remember some of the first JavaScript libraries. jQuery had a predecessor, and I've already forgotten what it was. I remember seeing people use that, and there's MooTools, other ones.
Dojo or something like that, I think, was also a JavaScript framework.
Dojo, yeah, there was. And I remember when jQuery came out and talking to some of my coworkers at Freightliner, and they're like, oh, this is cool. And that's when jQuery just took off.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, unfortunately, you can now do backend with JavaScript exclusively as well. So I switched to full JavaScript.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I followed a similar path starting with PHP. I just jumped over the jQuery part because JavaScript just didn't make sense to me. It's like, it's cool. I like the reactivity, but it didn't click. The JavaScript didn't really make sense until I started playing more with Vue. I ended up building a PHP jQuery prototype, needed more control over it. You gave me that framework.
Yeah, it was the same with Angular. I really didn't start playing with JavaScript till Angular. And as part of Angular, I had to learn some core JavaScript stuff, which probably makes, you know, true JavaScript programmers just cringe. But that's where I think a lot of us come into. I learned PHP by starting with Drupal because it gave you that abstraction layer that did a lot of stuff for you. So as a beginner, it makes it easier to jump in and learn, and then start learning the underlying language as well.
Yeah, I actually, back when I started learning JavaScript, there was pre jQuery, so there wasn't really any alternative to learn it with like any good framework that you could just use and learn it along with that framework. So you had to start from scratch, basically. And I think Angular like was one of the first big SPA frameworks that was also quite like popular and backed by Google. So it was kind of a natural next step from jQuery if you wanted to do more front end stuff.
That makes a lot of sense. I think to Steve's point, a lot of people jump into frameworks today because they want to get something done. They want to build something.
Yeah.
And then they learn along the way the various functionalities of JavaScript and how to handle certain edge cases. Things that the frameworks were invented to either help the developer experience or just to avoid altogether.
Yeah.
I took a course in C#, and that was his approach. We're going to learn ASP.NET. You don't know C# yet, but I'm going to teach you ASP.NET because we're going to build something that you can actually see on a screen instead of just logging out to the console.
Yeah, and modern day front end frameworks like Vue or React or whatever actually allow you to build a whole app without even like thinking about a backend. So you basically barely need a backend anymore if you don't really like want to have one. And then you can build like 90% of your app in the front end with Vue, for example, and have just the tiniest backend. And back then you had to have like a huge backend for everything, and there wasn't really a front end, so it kind of switched. So that's also really nice because then when you start like learning Vue, for example, you don't really need to get that much into PHP or Node or whatever, because like the tiniest API backend is already sufficient to build a pretty app on top of it.
Yeah, it definitely eases the path to getting into web development. You don't have to think about the server in nearly the same way that we used to.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Like you said at the top, Stefan, we did ask you on to talk about something very specific you were working on with Vue. This is an app that I have been using throughout the pandemic to play a game with a number of friends over Discord. Would you mind introducing it for us?
Sure. So the app that I built is called Blood on the Clock Tower, Virtual Town Square and Grimoire, which is quite a long name, but most of it is actually the name of the board game it was built for, and that would be Blood on the Clock Tower. And do you want me to like give a brief overview over the game now? Or?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, so yeah, basically the game that this assists you with is a social deduction game. That means it's like Werewolf or Mafia, which would be the most popular games of this genre. And Blood on the Clock Tower takes the basic formula that these, I think they're pretty old games, created and like evolves it. So the creators of Blood on the Clock Tower took the basic ingredients from Werewolf and from Mafia and from a couple of other social deduction games and built something much better. And then went to Kickstarter and basically ran a successful campaign. And then kind of the pandemic hit and also like the usual Kickstarter production issues. So there are now, I think, at least two years over the estimated release date. So people that have backed the game back then are still waiting for the actual product. But they were really, really kind and generous by releasing or supporting the release of print and play materials. So people were basically able to print and play the game components of Blood on the Clock Tower and run this game locally in their store or a group of friends. And through this alone, it already became quite the big hit in gaming groups and stores like around the world. And one of these gaming groups was mine. So I started actually building a physical prototype for the game with the print and play components. And we started playing it like, I think almost 2 years ago. And we had a blast. It was a very great success in our local store. And it became very popular. And then what everyone knows, the pandemic hit. So we couldn't basically play it anymore because social deduction games are like among the games where you need the most people in the closest spaces. So you can't really meet and play these games anymore with the limits that are imposed everywhere. So we had to resort to playing it online. And first we did so through Discord and other online tools, just like to have voice chat. And that went okay-ish. The storyteller still had to have some kind of physical grimoire or game component at hand to manage the game. But it was already quite doable, but not a very pleasant experience because like players couldn't see each other. And it was kind of hard to follow the game state when everyone was remote and on voice chat only. And especially for the storyteller, it was hard to manage the game because like one of the big components of the game was or is the voting procedure, for example. And that requires in the physical game to stand in the middle of the circle of players, then move your hand in a clockwise direction and then count every player that has their hand up. And that's just something you can't do like online in a convenient way. So there were some big drawbacks of playing just through voice chat. And then I actually had some free time. I'm currently on parental leave, so I didn't have any work to do. And I decided, okay, maybe this could be solved by an online app in some way. And because, like I said before, I come from a JS Angular background, and I was quite unhappy with the way Angular like was handled after the new version releases. So I decided to look for a framework to build this app in. And that brought me to Vue.js. And I basically started building this companion app for Blood on the Clock Tower just to initially help my group of friends run their games smoother and like with less hurdles, basically. And that went really well. So initially the idea was just to have the app locally in your have the game master or the so-called storyteller has this app open locally on the browser and then just takes screenshots to share with the other players to represent the game state. And that was kind of the first version. And back then the games were already happening on other Discord servers, on the unofficial Discord server, like daily games. And people back then were still using like MS Paint pictures drawn by hand or text messages to represent the game state. So at some point when the app was kind of usable already, I decided to share with the unofficial Discord community, which is, I think, currently quite big already. I think they have like 4,000 members or something like that. And well, it kind of took off from there. So they liked it and liked using it. And I started or I continued to improve it, added some backend functionality, some live sessions. That's kind of like an online service where you can join a play session in the app and then have some features that can only be done like this, for example, the voting. And yeah, step by step, it became basically the standard app to play Blood on the Clock Tower that's now even used on the official stream on Twitch and the YouTube videos. And basically, wherever people play Clock Tower online, they use the app that I built to help them run the game, basically. Because it plays a lot smoother and allows players to keep track of information a lot better if you have the page open on your browser and can save information there and keep track of what happens.
My initial interaction with this app, I think, came in like May or June in 2020 during the pandemic, when some friends introduced me to Blood on the Clock Tower and in a local group here in Portland, Oregon, that was wanting to play. Obviously, for reasons of the pandemic, they weren't meeting in person anymore. They'd started playing games on Discord. And I was introduced to the app. I was like, oh, this is really nice. You can really get into what's going on. You can pay attention to the game. I feel like it replicates the experience as best as possible in a digital way. It's been really fun to watch the new features come out as you've been doing more and more development on it. Just been really fun to watch. And I don't remember if it was the first or the second game that I played. I noticed my few dev tools light up and, oh, this is a Vue app. Oh, I can look at the code. This is cool. So yeah, I just got a kick out of that and wanted to chat with you because, like you said, at this point, the app is being used pretty regularly across the Blood on the Clock Tower community. Mm-hmm. So I was curious how you built the app. What were some of the decisions you made while building it? And how did you build it so it could scale to cover all of these different games? Granted, this isn't like Facebook size application, it's still a smaller group, but I'd love to hear what decisions you made to build this.
Yeah, funny that you mentioned May, because I think that was around the time where live sessions and voting made their appearance. So where it really became a really big advantage to use the app, because before that, voting online was like really tedious and players had to like use the voice chat to say yes or no. And that's kind of what was one of the bigger releases. So yeah, like I said, initially, it was just supposed to be kind of an like, let's call it offline app to open in your browser and just use like for yourself. So the storyteller could use it to basically keep track of the game state. And back then it wasn't the default that players used it to, because when you play Clock Tower in real life, then there's usually no note keeping allowed involved. So players just have to remember what everyone did and claimed, what roles they claimed and what moves they made. And the app kind of changed the metagame of Clock Tower, because now everyone that used the app locally on their browser was also able to keep track of the claims the players made and turned the game kind of into from who's trustworthy into a puzzle, like which situation is actually realistic or which situation doesn't make sense. And that's where the whole thing basically started. So there wasn't really any scaling issues there, because like it was hosted or is hosted on GitHub Pages. You basically just open the page in your browser and then you see some static files, and so that it doesn't matter if there's like 1,000 people doing that or just 10. And all of this changed when voting had to be added, or when I had to wanted to add voting, and with that live sessions basically. So I had to think of a way where people could interact with each other's app sessions, so to speak, and share information among each other. And yeah, that's basically where I started to add or got into Vuex as the data store, and then look into how to synchronize the data from the Vuex stores among different browser sessions. So yeah, that basically required that I add a small backend server, and because like I said, I like JavaScript and use it as my main language for everything. It was a node server, and on top of that, there were web sockets. So whenever a player changed something in their local game state, in their local Vue.x storage, the Vue.x module would basically synchronize this change to all the other players. And initially that went fine, but when the app became more popular, this started to turn into a problem because every little state change that the storyteller wanted to push to the players and the players would wanted to push to the storyteller was basically broadcast to everyone in the same game session, and that led to some quite spammy situations where claiming a seed or I don't know voting or whatever led to many thousands of messages being sent to everyone in the same session. So you had a lot of traffic of basically WebSocket messages, and so I had to think about how can this be solved, and then basically had to add some new methods and filters that allowed one-to-many communication and one-to-one communication. And yeah, basically with that, there was some new design space, so to speak, that allowed me to then build more useful features on top of that, like distributing the player roles to each player straight from the app, for example. Before that, the storyteller had to go to every player individually through voice chat or text message and tell them, you're this or that role. And after that, because I had one-to-many messages then, or one-to-one messages, I could add a feature that allowed the storyteller to push basically individual messages to individual players. And yeah, from that, it basically the whole app grew into what it is today. I would consider it mostly feature complete. I mean, I still have like dozen different requests on GitHub that where players want to have new features to be added to the app, but I would argue that most of them are like niche at best or very specific, so the majority of players would not really benefit from them. So, and with real life moving on and me having a bit less time currently, I basically currently only do small stuff, and maybe when I have more time, I will add some bigger features there. And just to give you an idea how the numbers grew and how the usage of the app grew, currently throughout the week we have like, let me just look, pull up the numbers real quick. We have like between 150 and 200 players concurrently every day as the peak. And the biggest number of players that I've seen so far was around 300 at the same time. And so that means there are like up to 20 games running at the same time on the app, each of them with, I don't know, 7 to 20 players in them. So it's grown quite a bit. And fortunately, through the WebSocket changes I made, and the small node backend keeps up with the demand so far. But I guess if or when it becomes more popular, I will have to look into further optimizations there to not make it melt my backend server.
Yeah, we don't want the imp to go after the backend server instead of the storyteller.
Exactly.
Very nice.
And then, yeah. And then at some point, I'm already thinking about how to add actual voice chat and maybe later even webcam support straight into the app, so that players can don't have to use Discord, for example, if they don't want to anymore. So that would be then the next logical step. But this would require quite a lot of work on both front end and back end, and also hardware upgrades probably, because then we're no longer sending small text messages, but full data streams through the back end.
Hey folks, it's Charles Maxwood, and I just wanted to jump in here and let you know about something that I'm doing. It's free. It's out there just to help you get answers to your questions about the things that you're running into with your career. So if you have questions about how to get further ahead in your career, how to start a podcast, how to get a better job, how to get a raise, how to deal with a situation at work with your boss, or just maybe you're stuck and you don't know where to go next. You know, how do I get from junior to senior, senior to whatever's next? How do I become a speaker? How do I get to the next level? That's what I'm out here to do. So every Wednesday at 12 o'clock Mountain Time, I'm going to be doing a call, and it's going to be free, totally free. Go to devchat.tv/levelup and you can register for the call. using Zoom's webinar software. So it's pretty straightforward. And what we're going to be doing is I'll do 10 minutes and I'll just show you how I do some form of how I level up. And then
step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
We'll just answer questions. And it's not going to be a question and answer like, hey, what's your favorite flavor of ice cream? And then I say Rocky Road or whatever, right? Instead, what we're looking for is more along the lines of, yeah, I have this situation. How do I handle it? I'm trying to figure this thing out. How do I figure it out? I'm trying to stay current. How do I stay current? And if you have any of those kinds of questions, I'll bring you on the call. We'll ask some deeper questions. We'll make sure we get you a solid answer. And I'm really looking forward to helping some people out. There will be no sales, no selling, no nothing on these calls. It is literally just 10 minutes of training and then Q&A. So you can go check it out at devchat.tv/levelup.
Yeah, it was actually, that was going to be my next question. As this app grows, were you going to consider switching to something like WebRTC? I know from listening to other podcasts, people talking about building backends like this to do the live communication, WebSocket only scales so far unless you want to pay for higher server power.
Yeah.
But with something like WebRTC, you could pass directly between clients and the server could just serve as a handshake. Is that something you considered?
I looked into WebRTC, but the thing is, most people are behind NAT or routers, so you would still have to route the whole traffic through your server. So, I mean, sure, it wouldn't need processing power, but it would still be a huge bandwidth demand there, and then you still need to upgrade your servers. But yeah, WebRTC would be my first go-to technology to use there. And then if it doesn't work out or there is a huge scaling issue, then maybe switch to a platform that already provides voice chat and maybe video chat. But yeah, those usually cost a lot of money. So I would prefer to keep it with WebRTC and just do the hosting myself, basically.
That makes sense. It's not something that I've played with too much. So I'm not as familiar with the specifics of how it works.
Yeah, no, it sounds great on paper, but then you realize most people don't have network setups that allow communication directly with each other. And then you still have the server there that needs to pass every package through their own network interface.
Right. One of the other things I really appreciate about this app is you put a lot of time into the animations that happen here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And granted, I know Vue has some built-in support for animations, but you don't see it as much in just standard web apps.
Yeah,
People are concerned about the flashiness of having a menu pop out from the side or having the clock hands actually go around the circle. What did you use to implement that? What was that like?
Yeah, actually, it's a good question because I think I used the Vue animation capabilities like only in one or two places because it is quite complicated to do animations just with Vue, because then you need like a bunch of CSS classes that get triggered on enter, on leave, and stuff like that. So I only used it where there was no way around it. I think one of them is the countdown for the voting, because that would have been very tricky to do with just CSS. And I think at one other place. And all of the other animations are straight CSS animations. So it's kind of also, because it's like a passion hobby project of mine and not something I do for work, that I took some time to actually polish the animations, because I also enjoy looking at them as a player or as a user. So where possible, I added some fancy CSS stuff, CSS animations, transitions, like mostly, and a few CSS animations, even up to the point where people started asking me if I could add a button to disable all of these animations because it tended to slow down their browser.
Oh, no. How could you enjoy it?
Yeah, I think the biggest culprit there was the night mode background cloud animation where the clouds moved across the screen. I mean, it's a full screen, huge, high resolution image that slowly pans across the screen. And I think some lower end PCs just can't handle that.
Yeah. One of the other features I appreciate, this is more of an aesthetic thing, is the audio as you're starting the countdown. For those who are, this has been mentioned a few times, but for those who aren't aware, in the game, the game is called Blood on the Clock Tower. When you're voting on whether somebody should be executed by the town, the storyteller stands in the middle of the group in real life and pretends basically to be a clock going around the circle. So there's this in the app, there's this sound effect that plays as the clock starts to spin. And it's just really nice. Just a lot of nice touches in this app that make it feel fun. It's not your normal, just like a data view of some sort.
Yeah.
It's not like playing Civilization 6 or something where you've got all the tables of data. It's pretty, but it's just tables of data. This is not that. It actually feels really nice to use. All of the data is easily available, but it feels comfortable. And that's something I really appreciate about it.
Yeah, like I said, I spent quite a lot of time polishing it, just like doing like these small things that make it look a bit better. And fun fact, the sound effect that you hear when the countdown starts is like a recording of an actual clock tower. So it's quite fitting.
Oh, even better. That's cool. Steve or Solomon, have you had a chance to look at the app?
Yeah, I've been looking at the online site. Unfortunately, I'm not much of a gamer, so I can't give a lot of feedback into the game itself. I haven't played it yet. I know my son likes to play similar games on his phones with some of his buddies where you're trying to figure out who the murderer is or who's the mole, that kind of stuff. So I've seen that played, but this is definitely a lot more than I would be tackling in my off time.
Yeah, I think getting to know the game through the app is kind of hard because you need an actual game situation to see how it works. So checking out a video would probably make more sense to see the app in action. This is actually one of the drawbacks or one of the points where I didn't have spent enough time yet or where I would want to spend more time is actually make it more accessible, like add some kind of tutorial, a bit more information to actually be able to understand the game itself through the app. Because right now you have to know the game in order to use the app and not the other way around.
Yeah, that'd be really nice. I remember my first... granted, the app has been in development for over a year from my first touching it.
Yeah.
But I remember being a little bit lost as I was first
looking
I know. At this thing. What's going on?
Absolutely. I guess
I'm the slayer, but I don't know what to do.
Yeah. it's a big point, but it's just like writing tests for your code is just something that would be really nice to have to see when stuff breaks, but I just don't have the time. And once you know the app, you no longer need a tutorial. So it's also kind of something that solves itself just by using the app. But you're absolutely right. For someone who sees the app the first time and has no idea how to use it, it's like a terrible initial experience.
So it looks like this is also an open source project. And there's a number of issues and pull requests that people have filed with you. Are you looking for anyone to come and work on the app and tackle any of those issues? Is this like an open source project you want to have a community form around as well?
Well, yes and no. So you're absolutely right that there are already a few people who contributed to the app and also implemented some useful features. So that's something I really appreciate and also try to support by providing code reviews and giving feedback. On the other hand, one of my goals with creating this app was to basically make the authors of the board game, the Pandemonium Institute, aware of this app so that, because I don't know if you know this, but the Pandemonium Institute, the makers of the board game, actually have plans or had plans to also create a companion app for the game. But given the whole Kickstarter delays and everything, they just weren't able to get to this yet. And I mean, how could they? They need to focus on like finishing the physical game before doing the digital version. So I kind of jumped in there and tried to build this app how I would imagine it would work or would look like. And I can't give any details, but let's just say I've already been approached by them. So at this point, I'm not sure if making this like a whole community thing would be the best direction to take this in, because if it gets acquired, or like if this becomes the official app, then it would be a Pandemonium Institute project and no longer like community driven open source thing. I mean, in theory, it could be both, but that's kind of also hard to maintain if they want to keep like stay in charge of the direction the app takes. So at the moment, I'm kind of like hesitant to take on new contributors that do big changes, because I want to see how things play out and when the game is released, and the Pandemonium Institute has more time to dedicate to their or my app or whatever it will be then.
That makes a lot of sense. No matter what happens, I'm excited to see what happens in the future with this app. I have very much appreciated it during the pandemic, and I look forward to continuing to use it in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's open source and a GPL license, it will always be, this version that you can use today will always be available and always be forkable and like enhanceable. It might be that I won't spend a lot of time on this version when there will be an official one, for example. But you can always take that and play with it and maybe build on top of it. And so it can always be a community project, just that it might have like some competition from the official app then at some point if there is one.
Right, that makes sense. Are there any specific lessons that you've learned while building this application that you're able to use in future Vue applications? This is a specific case where it's getting significant use. I mean, still talking in the hundreds of users, but we're, you know, there is a number of users actively using this application. Is there any patterns or any thoughts you've had while building this that you're able to take into other projects you're working on?
Well, the biggest takeaway for me would be that Vue is an awesome framework that I want to use more in the future, ideally professionally.
So,
I would kind of compare it to Angular back then when it was still cool. So Angular 1.1x before the two version got released. So that would be my biggest takeaway. Then kind of, well, yeah, it's not. Yeah, I didn't encounter like any huge issues, to be honest. There were some smaller things that made it kind of tricky. So, for example, the icons that I used, they are from Font Awesome, and they provide a Vue module, but they're kind of unflexible how to use these. So you had to. I think they're, yeah. If you use the Vue Font Awesome module, you can't add icons that can be manipulated through CSS. So they will always be, I think it's called a component in Vue, right? I mean, what would be a directive in Angular? So basically a tag that's the Font Awesome tag. And then, so it's kind of unflexible. That's something that I disliked a bit, because I would have loved to be able to insert icons like in text or through CSS, which is just not possible there. Well, one other thing, and that's actually a bit bigger, and that's actually something that's kind of, I would say, a Vue drawback is, and it's a very, very specific thing. But when you have a string that contains some text, and you want to replace part of this text in this string with, let's say, an emoji or an HTML tag, this is something that's just not possible in a like convenient way. So in case of my app, it's the ability of the role that you're displaying. So it's something that's loaded from a JSON file, can be any kind of data. It will be a string, and it might contain something that should be an icon. And this is just something that I couldn't get to work. So let's say the ability reminder text for the ability has an icon that means close your eyes, so a closed eye icon. There's no way I was able to insert a Font Awesome icon in the place where I was displaying the text. And I wasn't able to figure this out. So there was, you can do string manipulation in place, like with what's this character called? You probably...
Oh, the pipe?
Yeah, with the pipe, thanks. So with the pipe, you can do some string manipulation to influence the output, the appearance of the string. But what the pipe is not able to do is actually turn parts of the string into HTML that also gets evaluated by Vue. And I was very sad when I found that out. So what I wanted to do is take the string, take parts of the string, replace it with the Font Awesome icon through the pipe. Not possible. And yeah, that's like super specific, but it's just something that I kind of got stumped by and then wasn't able to figure out a solution. So I kind of said, okay, then there won't be any icons in and a reminder, sadly.
Yeah, I'm not sure the best way to implement that. And what's interesting about using the pipe, that's actually been removed in Vue 3. The filters are no longer a part of Vue.
Filter, thank you. That was the word I was looking for. Yeah, so, okay. That's actually something that I wanted to do as well. Last year when I started working on the project, I used Vue 2, and I still need to update to Vue 3. Okay, so that's lucky me. I didn't use pipes. That's one less thing to worry about.
Very cool. I think my final question, Steve, do you have anything you would like to ask before we get to the end?
The only question that comes to mind is how much wood could a woodchuck chuck? A woodchuck could chuck wood, but that's not relevant to this product. So no, I have nothing else.
Okay. My last question for you, Stefan, would be, what is your favorite role when playing Blood on the Clock Tower for the intersection of people who like Blood on the Clock Tower and listen to our podcast?
That's a tricky one. I mean, they're releasing a new role from the Kickstarter like every 2 weeks, and it's kind of the newer ones are always more exciting because the older ones you've played like a ton of times. But my favorite role, probably the evil twin, just because it's one of those roles that create a super unique dynamic when it's in play, and it's always exciting to see both as a storyteller and as a player how someone with the evil twin or the associated good twin handles the situation. I think this is one of the perks of Blood on the Clock Tower versus Werewolf or Mafia, that every role can be exciting and no player has like the dummy townsfolk, I have no ability role. So I would go with evil twin then.
That's one of the things I appreciate about the game as well, is everyone has some contribution that they can give. Everyone has some information or some ability.
Exactly.
And when you do die for whatever reason, you're still not out of the game. You can still continue to contribute and participate.
Yeah, that's the second big the second big advantage. Yeah. The game isn't over if you're dead.
Quick, since you picked the evil twin, I was storytelling a game of S&D. I'll simplify it for those listening. And for whatever reason, the demon was allowed to change somebody's role, so they swapped the evil twins. The evil twin and the good twin. And they just flipped them.
That sounds amazing.
It was hysterical. It was a great way to end that game. Yeah, the game ended shortly after that because it was fun. And that's one of the things I like about this game. It's just so much fun. It's just a fun social activity to do with each other, whether you're online or...
Yeah, and every game is memorable, right? I mean, even you use the same roles or similar roles, every game is unique, which is also really, really, really awesome.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Stefan.
Hey, folks, if you love this podcast and would like to support the show, or if you wish you could listen without the sponsorship messages, then you're in luck. We're setting up new premium podcast feeds where you can get all of the episodes released after Christmas 2020 without the ads. Signing up will help us pay for editing and production, and you can go sign up at devchat.tv/premium.
At this point, we're going to move on to picks. Picks are the part of the show where we share things that we like with the community. They don't have to be programming related. I will go first. Steve, do you have a pick for us today, Steve?
Yes, I do. In addition to the weekly jokes, which I know everybody is on the edge of their seat waiting for, I'm going to go with a Tailwind UI update from Adam Wadden. It just came out today, and it's Tailwind UI e-commerce. Looks like it's been fully released. So they've got product overviews and lists and category previews and quick views and store navigation and just a whole ton of Tailwind built components that you can use on an e-commerce site. So I bought a lifetime membership about a year ago or so. And for a site that I built, I just used a bunch of their components that you just copy paste into Vue. You can just literally put them into the template section of your Vue component and then, you know, fill in your variables and stuff as needed. But I've always loved the Tailwind stuff, and this stuff just makes it really easy to integrate Tailwind into whatever you're building and then tweak it to suit your site's needs. Now, going to the much anticipated jokes, there's one I don't think I've told it here, Lindsay, so you have to forgive me if I did tell it. I know I repeated it on the other podcast, but have either of you heard about the band called 1023 MB?
1023 MB?
Yeah, they're really good, but they can't get a gig.
Oh, no.
Waiting for the heat laughter. Anyway.
That was a good one.
Yes, it was. And then, also big announcement, Lindsay. I think you saw this on Twitter. But I was so ecstatic that Stand Up T-Rex is back on Instagram. And so I was really despondent there for a few weeks, but he's back in action. And so I'm very happy about that. So what's the worst part about going out to eat duck? It's the bill.
That is the worst part.
Yes, it is. The bill. Reminds me, I don't know if I'm going to guess you're a little too young to remember this, but there was a whole series of t-shirts by this guy named John Barron. I was looking him up, and the pictures of ducks, and they had different labels. So for instance, the classic one, I think, was Mallard-Justed, and it showed, you know, this duck with his head backwards, or there was Tall Duck and Handsome, you know, shows a duck in a tuxedo, or Not Playing with the Full Duck, she was just sort of half a duck. And anyway, the reason that reminded me is one of the shirts that I had the caption of Another Bill, and it shows a duck passed out in front of his mailbox and a duck bill sticking out of the mailbox, because it freaked him out. Anyway, those are good. And you can actually find them on Etsy. There's a few places that still have them. And last joke of the day, well, actually not a joke, it's a story. Forget I said that. These are really true stories, by the way. A while ago, I was taking an anaconda breeding class, but I failed it because of a late assignment because my homework ate my dog. So anyway, that's it for me.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Very much appreciate it. Yes, Stefan, do you have a pick for us today?
Sure. I recently had some time to actually play Disco Elysium through. I don't know if you know this. It's a computer game. You could call it an adventure RPG mix. It's really, really great. It's kind of, if you took a really good book and then turned that into a game with lots of dialogues. So it's like the best written game I've played so far. It plays in a dystopian world after the revolution. I've really enjoyed it. It's for people that like story heavy games that also allow quite a lot of like influencing the story. So I was happy to actually find some time to play this through, and I don't regret a single minute of it. Disco Elysium.
Awesome. Thank you. I think I'm going to check that out. So I have two picks and a shout out today. First, I'll do a programming pick. As of recording, Vue 3.2 recently released, includes a number of new features, including script setup being a feature complete release. It's no longer under preview or anything. You can also vbind style. So what that allows you to do is if you have something in your JavaScript, you can then import it into your CSS directly with a vbind, which is kind of interesting. Excited to see what happens there. And also, Vue 3.2 allows you to define custom web components rather than creating a standard Vue component, which then allows you to import that web component in your regular application, in a React application, in an Angular application, wherever you want, that you can normally use a web component. So that's kind of cool, being able to build web components just with Vue itself using the standard Vue API. So if you haven't yet taken a look at Vue 3.2, I highly recommend it. Its code name is Quintessential Quintuplets. There's a blog post on the Vue.js site about that. My second pick is, if you are intrigued about this game we've been talking about, Blood on the Clock Tower, there's an excellent podcast out there called Cult of the Clock Tower, by Andrew Nathanson, where he talks about the different roles that appear in the game. I highly recommend starting from the beginning. He's talking through the second of three scripts that exist in the game, and the first portions of the show talk about the first script, which is called Troubled Ruins. It's a little easier to onboard into if you're interested in the game. So highly recommend checking that out. That's Cult of the Clock Tower. And then shout out to the group that I play with for Blood on the Clock Tower, at pdxbotc.com. We do a bunch of events in person and online. I recommend, if you're in that area, to come and join us. It'll be lots of fun.
Can you already play in person again, or is it still online?
Could briefly. Restrictions are coming back. That's another topic.
Yeah. All right.
So, Stefan, how can people find you if they want to either continue this conversation or just learn more about what you've been up to?
I guess GitHub would be the best way there. I mean, it has the code for the project we talked about, and also has my contact details and other things I work on. So yeah, probably GitHub.
Excellent. Thank you. And thank you so much for coming on the show. This was excellent.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Thanks for the amazing questions. I'm looking forward to hear it when it's done.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Hope you all enjoyed listening to this as well. If you want to hear more from us, you can find us at viewsonview.com or at devchat.tv. You can also find us on Twitter at viewsonview. You can find myself on Twitter at Lindsay K. Wardell and Steve on Twitter at Wonder95. Hope you have a good day. We'll see you again next week.
Adios.
Bye-bye.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.